You know that ridiculous way pet owners talk to their animals?
Who's my boy? You want a potty for daddy?
Yeah, he's the best dog in the world.
Yeah, you won't hear any of that here. This is the Mid-Michigan Pet Expert Talk Show on More Compelling Talk Radio, 1320 WILS.
We're back here with the Mid-Michigan Pet Expert Talk Show. And Rick, we have with us as a returning guest in the studio, Jason Bogut, who is the assistant manager and one of the great reptile experts you'll see if you go to the Pruse Pets Reptile Department. Welcome back to the show, Jason.
It's great to be back.
Oh, it's our pleasure to have you. The reason we wanted to have you back is because today we've been talking about turtles and frogs, and the big focus on them in the previous segments have been those that are out in nature. But some of them, while they can make good pets, others really are not meant for the pet trade, and there are others that are meant for the pet trade, and we wanted to have you in to talk about those. Can you share a little bit of your insights on frogs and turtles and what makes the good ones for pets and what makes the ones that you should just keep in nature?
That's a great subject to talk about because it's something I deal with a lot at Pruse Pets. There are a lot of awesome turtles and frogs out there in nature, and some of them actually translate into our environments that we can provide for them rather well and, in that case, make excellent pets. There's others that we really don't have what it takes to provide what they need and may not appreciate it when they get there. It's not always easy just to tell by looking at them what can be a great and easy pet and what you're not really going to provide what they need.
Yeah. The first thing that comes to mind is, you know, let's compare a leopard frog maybe compared to what we had as beautiful little tadpoles the other day.
Yeah, actually, I'm pretty proud about that. Rick's talking about our wonderful firebelly toads. We always tell our customers that if you build it naturally, nature will happen. And once again, they backed us up by having around 112 little babies there at Pruse recently, and you can see them now on display. Those guys make excellent pets. They're very common, very popular, great first-time frog because they're so easy to provide for.
Yeah, they don't have those really big. Everybody that's from Michigan can imagine any frog that they other than a tree frog maybe they capture they imagine these really big honking back legs, almost if it was a rabbit, big rabbit legs. You know, with a frog, you got those big honking back legs, and they've seen them jump across the pond practically. That's not the case with these guys.
Right. Rick's bringing up the primary defense of these runted frogs that we see around us, the green frog, bullfrog, and all those guys. Their primary defense is the powerful leap, and that actually makes it hard for us to provide an environment that can be safe for them.
Right.
They respond to a fear situation by leaping out, and unless we've provided quite an enormous cage, they're going to be slamming into the side of it and therefore not really going to make a good pet candidate. But the firebelly toads, their defense is to actually pretend like they're very poisonous. Those great big red bellies are to warn people of powerful poisons, the same way the poison dart frogs do. But in this case, with the firebelly toads, though they do have weak excretions, it's mostly a bluff.
Yeah, and they are gorgeous. I mean, they call them a firebelly toad. They come from tropical waters, I think Southeast Asia, is that right? And they're just absolutely fantastic. You can't find a more colorful frog here in Michigan. Not saying you should look for one necessarily, but even there isn't anything that rivals it here. And then the other point to probably mention, because we're relatively short on time, I want to make sure we bring up the topic of turtles and how appropriate or inappropriate those are going to be as pets and what kind of thought process goes into that. And first, maybe comment on the legality and then go from there.
Well, actually, that's a good way to set it up because I talk to people about turtles all the time. And it's very important that I explain to them they can be beautiful, safe, display animals in their house that they'd be proud to have. But taken care of inappropriately, they can be endanger themselves and a threat to their family. There was a time when the little baby turtles were thought to be low maintenance, inexpensive, great pets for kids. And actually, since the late 70s, they've been illegal to sell under 4 inches in shell length because not one of those statements could be further from the truth. They are one of the most expensive reptiles to set up for properly and one of the most work-intensive, but worth it if that's the kind of beautiful display animal that you're looking for. But if you're looking for that niche pet that you can just give to your kid and not worry about, that is not a turtle.
What kind of dangers do they typically represent other than, I can imagine, a snapping turtle? That snap, I can imagine, wouldn't be very fun, but are they poisonous?
Well,
or what is their defense mechanism, per se?
It's actually not even a defense mechanism. It's something that we deal with very naturally in our trade without even thinking about it. But one of the most important things we deal with all of our pets is the removal of their waste. Now, any animal that lives in a cage where it's going to come back in contact with its own feces has some level of salmonella risk.
Okay.
It's a waste-related bacteria. But you keep the cage clean and dry most of the time, that risk is almost none. Wash your hands afterwards, pretty comfortable zero. But the aquatic turtle puts out copious amounts of waste that dissolves pretty much instantly into a warm water situation. It's a very friendly environment for the salmonella bacteria to thrive.
So, you know, if you're having a child, and the public warnings on this would simply be, you know, if you have a child under five, you want to keep them away from that, and keep them away from the turtles. Well, on a more national standpoint, the way they actually executed that, so to speak, is just eliminated the sale of any turtle that is 4 inches or smaller than 4 inches. 4 inches or smaller, I'm not, semantics is here aside, but the turtle has to be more than 4 inches in size in order to even be legal. And oddly enough, that eliminated the general threat to the public. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, too often in different scenarios, there's some loopholes that were thought to be, they're not really loopholes, it's just lack of
enforcement.
But some feel that with a signed affidavit saying you're going to be using it for educational purpose, that it's okay to keep a small turtle. And, you know, realistically, that's not the truth, and it's probably best not to exercise that. So in order to keep a turtle that's 4 inches or larger, it has a larger homing environment, just like the frog scenario where, you know, not a lot of people are going to provide a 4-foot by 3-foot by 3-foot cubed area for a frog, and that might even be a little small. Right. With turtles, when they're 4 inches of size, it requires a larger environment, larger equipment, larger, you know, stuff.
Right.
You know, so just something you want to think about, you know, that the wild animals that you grab from outdoors are probably just best pet put back outdoors.
Well, plus, when you think about the fact that they can live for 70 years, they can pretty much outlive a lot of us.
Sure.
I've got a question about the environment to keep them in, because it occurs to me both turtles and frogs rotate between both land and water, and in the case of frogs, I would imagine even jungle type of environment. So what is the proper environment to keep them in? Because it's not really an aquarium filled with water animal, I would think, because they would miss that land exposure. How do you give them the best of all, or am I just crazy?
Well, you're crazy, but that has nothing to do with this show.
What a wonderfully, wonderfully broad question, actually. And it's expansive enough to encompass a lot of what I love about this hobby. 90% of having a healthy animal is providing the environment they can thrive in. And the details of that are like an art form.
Right.
You mentioned aquarium. That's a water-filled environment. Well, we call them terrariums when they're land environments. And one thing that we're having a lot of fun with lately are paludariums, which are land and water environments. And with different animals, you provide them their niche needs in slightly different ways. You think of frogs as being highly aquatic because you're most familiar with the aquatic frogs here in northern Michigan. But there are a lot that are terrestrial that never come down to the water. There are a lot that live in land and water, and there's even some wonderful frogs that live completely underwater, like the fascinating Pippa Pippa frogs or African clawed frogs. They get big as a bar of soap.
Wow.
Bigger than that.
Even bigger than that?
Oh, bigger than a bar of soap.
Well, Rick's seen some awesome frogs, so he's probably seen some bigger honkers.
I think you're just dealing with small bars of soap, maybe. I don't know.
Could be.
Awesome. So it really depends on the specific environment. Some are easy to keep. The fire-bellied toad, the one that Rick brought up as an example, very flexible. You could do a complete terrarium with a large water dish. You could do an aquatic environment with an area for them to get up out of the water. And then there are some that are kind of hard to provide for just because their needs are so enormous. Like the softshell turtles really don't make good pets because a male is 18 inches in shell length and a female is 24. Imagine the enormous aquarium you're going to have to put that in.
Wow. Yeah. That would take up quite a bit of space.
And one thing that we have on display that anybody can see, and it's that kind of explore the beautiful frog world of tropical paradise, would be right down at NCG Theater. We have a poison dart frog environment. Maybe you can talk a little bit about that,
yeah,
Jason.
What's over there?
Well, that's just Prue's doing what Prue's can do, showing off a little bit, but that's because we can. It's our beautiful 220-gallon vivarium in which we keep all of our adult frogs. And we've got the whole thing self-contained. We've got a fogger that has rolling fog to come through to keep the moisture levels up to imitate the rainforest. We have a rain system that goes off every 2 hours. And the whole thing takes care of itself.
And this is over at which theater?
Well, at NCG Theater, you'll see these poison dart frogs. We'll have pictures above the tank that kind of shows you which ones to find. And then it's the mad dash to search for these awesome, beautiful, colorful creatures that you wouldn't ever imagine even exists on this planet. They're just so beautiful.
Right. Well, so you can go to the NCG Theater at Eastwood Township and see it, or you can come into Proust Pets and you can see Jason or one of the other great experts that they've got working inside the reptile department. Jason, thank you so much for coming on the show. We really appreciate the insights you were able to bring us about this topic. And Rick, I've just got to say, I was fascinated with today's conversation. I had no idea that when I asked the question, why did the turtle cross the road, this is where I would land. But this is where we landed. But unfortunately, we are out of time.
Time to crawl on the other side of the road.
It is. So on behalf of our producer, Mark Price, and my co-host in the studio, Rick Proust, this is Lee Cohen wishing all of you a great weekend and a great week ahead. We'll talk with you again next weekend on the Mid-Michigan Pet Expert Talk Show right here on 1320 WILS and 1320WILS.com. And please, please take good care of your pets. Have a great weekend, everybody.